Okay, it is
a little bit more energy.
Hold on,
a little bit more energy.
Okay, now bring the energy. Go.
Ah, welcome to the Making It Down podcast. We're your twins, the hosts, Heather and Corey. Corey and Heather. Depends which one you like most and what day it is.
Heather and Corey.
We are an offshoot from a group on Facebook, and I want to tell you, if you have been pending and you have answered the questions and you put podcast in one of your answers, you're in the group.
Corey, I finally let people in.
I did. So if you have answered all the questions, you're in the group. I'm doing it every day. I'm staying on top of it.
Great. That's a great job.
It was about 2,000 people.
Really? How many people are pending? How many?
7,000 that have not answered the questions.
Let me look. Sugar cookie marketing. I'm going to. Oh, this is the. I think we get new podcast music.
Do we?
Yeah. What do we? What
I
should
want
we
a little
do?
Summer. Summer vibes.
Summer vibes, okay.
Summer jazzy vibes, you know, like something else.
Summer jazzy vibes, okay, let them hear it now. Okay, I'm going to see how many pending members there are. The magic number is 7,579.
So since I've done my part and let people in, you do your part and answer the questions.
Well, not very few at the top have answered the question. The reason why we want the questions answered is because there's so much spam in these Facebook groups. And it usually, they're genius. These spam accounts are getting smarter. They wait a couple days. Mm-hmm. And then, bam, at midnight, Eastern Standard Time, they try to sell you on a logo
draw. But I do want to say, me staying on top and waiting for everyone to answer the questions uh-huh. and answer them correctly uh-huh. has really staved off spam.
Yes. It's funny because, like, the spam bots now, they answer the questions. Yes.
Yeah. But sometimes they do use AI.
I don't know how they're doing it.
They answer correctly.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. Genius. AI, we are not ready for you.
Well, there is a Facebook group, and I'll let you in if you answer the questions, called Sugar Cookie Marketing, group.
Not to be confused with the page, which none of you like.
But every week that we are open for business, which is every week, we are able to see what bakers are talking about, latest trends, hot topics, marketing nuggies and know-hows. And we can bring it to the podcast so you can listen while you bake. And
very
make.
Nice. That was high energy.
Thank you.
I would sign up for your group. I would answer the questions. Jumping into today's podcast topic, it is value versus price.
And let me say that. Price. Value versus price.
Price. Wait, I'm saying it wrong?
Price. I don't price. Know.
I'm gonna be able I want to you guys know. To know it's value versus price. So when we talk about price. Like the anti-Kim Kardashian. When we talk about value versus price, they're very related but complete opposites.
They are.
And it is a very interesting concept. I was watching a YouTube video and this gentleman, I think it was kind of a TED Talk, he gets up and he asks a member of the audience, can I have a pen? And so the guy gives him his pen. He says, how much does this cost? He's like, I have $5 to $10. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, does anybody in the audience want to buy this pen? How much do you think I'd price it for? And they're like, well, $5 to $10 is what it's worth. And he's like, right, that's the price. He said, I'm going to take this pen. I'm going to drive to an expensive mall. I'm going to go to a jeweler's store. I'm going to put it in a mahogany box. That mahogany box is lined with velvet. That velvet-lined mahogany box is in a glass case, and there's a spotlight shown on this pen. Now, do you think the price is the same?
Mm-mm.
And he's like, because that's value. So everything surrounding the object is value, mm-hmm. and then what you – price it is obviously the price.
I think price is something that's fixed uh-huh. and value is perceived.
Value. Oh, that's very nice.
Perceived.
Perceived price. So if you want to raise your price, what you have to do is increase the value because the value is subjective. Mm-hmm. The price is objective, right? Mm-hmm. So if you want to sell a really fancy pen but not in the mahogany box, people aren't going to see the value behind mm-hmm. it, right? And that's why we can sell so many different cars. So Corey and I were talking on our now Tuesday morning walk. She has this going on. I'm so sweaty.
Yeah.
She had us saying that at the end of the day, a purse is meant to carry your crappy LV.
Yeah.
Like that's all it is. It's a handbag, right? Uh-huh. You put stuff in it. Some of them have more pockets. Some of them have less. But the concept doesn't change of its functionality. Uh-huh. But the value changes the price of it. So you can have a Birkin that's $50,000 or some of them that are $100,000. And then you can also go to Target and get something
those
that's about $5.
Throwaway bags that are.
Which you've been carrying around a lot. That little Target throwaway bag that I swear you use as a gift bag for summer.
It was not a Target one. It's from Hallmark.
Excuse me.
And I went to check out. It was way more expensive than I thought. So now I have to get the value out of it and carry it around.
Yeah. So there's the conversation between price, which is what you said, but everything that touches it is value.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when it comes to cookies, we have, okay, everyone says, know your cost, add a percentage. That's mm-hmm. that's the business admin side of things. Yeah. That's not when the client gets involved. So we have our cost covered. Let's say you do the math. This is how much it costs to bake it. We have to cover our indirect costs, which is electricity and things like that. And then we need to cover profits. We add 20%, right? Mm-hmm. That's our base price. That is as cheap as we can get and still function as a business. Yeah. But what happens when we want to increase the price beyond what the minimum is we can charge? Mm-hmm. Well, we've got to increase the value.
In value, in the perception of value, comes in so many – it's not like, oh, put a bow on it. There's mm-hmm. the value. There's so many different things from your customer service is a value differentiator. Mm-hmm. The photos you post to your page, there's value behind that.
That is great. That is the mahogany box of your cookies. So when we think about Brian Tracy made the Eat That Frog workbook, but he's a salesman by trade and has written like 80 books or something. Mm-hmm. So I was watching a YouTube video he had posted. He's like 90 years old. If he can post a YouTube video, we can all post YouTube videos. He said, if you can either choose as a salesperson to lead with price, in which case you are the most competitively priced. That is your value, is that you are the cheapest. Or you can lead with the value proposition, which puts price behind the curtain of look at everything else that you get along with the purchase of this thing. So he said, a good salesperson, like kind of think about if you just – leading with price would be posting a picture of cookies and just posting the price. And a lot of you are getting pretty close to that with your low effort captions, you know, and you're just like, here's how much it costs. And there's no value proposition. So you're not proposing all the value benefits that you get from making this purchase. So I had to buy a car. I had to buy a car last year, at the beginning of this year or something, because the other car, Corey, got tired of picking me up.
I did.
So what was my goal? Reliability, right? Uh-huh. That's the only thing. That was all I needed, something. Four wheels, did not break down.
Uh-huh.
What I ended up is spending a ton more money for all the value proposition that it turned out I got it from Acura, but it's like, but look at all this thing. So if you think about going to a car dealership, I think dealerships are phenomenal at this. And you see the window sticker, which is a literal sticker. The price is at the very bottom of a laundry list of value you get. So when you look at the window sticker, it breaks down absolutely everything you get, this, that, the other, the things it does. It never tells you what it undo. It only tells you what it does. And at the very bottom, it says, and here's the price for all of this value.
Yeah.
And that's the recommended MSRP. And then you go into the, and the dealership can even work with, I'm going to cut you a discount, but we're not going to make any money on this. But so, so then that's why it's so easy to fall prey to buying more and more car because of that value proposition of all this hoopla around it.
I would say a lot of us don't think that way because one, we got into making cookies because we went to buy cookies for our kids' birthday party and it was too expensive. And I said, I could probably do this myself.
That's what the pen guy said. He said there's 17 different buyer personalities. And he said, you and the person you're selling to are never the same.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't have produced it if you were the person who was willing to buy it.
Yeah.
So he said, never price according to what you value. You are almost the antithesis of your audience.
You're the anti-value.
Yeah. That's why you're so bad at being a client, you became the baker. You are a baker's worst nightmare. But for our audience, their value is either high quality ingredients you can lean into or you can do gluten and, you know, those gluten sensitive or gluten free things where they have an allergy. So that's that audience. Or you can have an audience who likes really fast turnaround time because they're late orderers. Yeah. That's why you'll have some people have really good audience for pre-sales and another person will be like, well, I can't make pre-sales move. Well, their audience that they've cultivated really likes last minute stuff.
Yeah.
And the other person cultivated an audience that likes to plan ahead
because they're booked out so far in advance.
That's why it's like when you try something new, it may be new to your audience who doesn't respond to it, but you haven't cultivated that other audience that does like it. So it's easy to be like, well, my audience isn't like cookie classes. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's that audience. You'd have to create another audience where you could sell cookie classes to. On the flip side, you have companies that do lead with price. That is their value proposition. So a great example.
Bob's Furniture.
No, Dollar Tree.
$1.25.
Dollar General. Like it's generally dollar. Like their sales pitch is they are the lowest price. And they're not competing on value. They're competing on price.
Yeah.
And it works really well for them. But Target isn't called – they have the dollar section.
It's called Target because it's fine. Yeah.
So you have – you know, look at – what's Target's tagline? Does it have one?
Target.
I think it's something –
more for Target.
No.
There is a tagline.
Okay, I'm going to find it. You go there all the time. Expect more, pay less.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now it's Walmart. I know Walmart's
always day at lower prices.
Save money, live better. So you have Walmart, even though Target kind of, I don't think Target's very,
very
cheap. But you have Walmart that says save money, live better, and they're leaning into price and availability.
Target to me is, hey, it'll be organized. Mm. There'll be fewer people here, but you're going to pay for that.
Yeah. That's funny that they have that tag. Nordstrom's brand tagline. It's called their brand promises closer to you. I guess because they're trying to compete with Amazon.
Oh, that could be. Yeah. But up here, there's Bob's Discount Furniture, and he leads with price.
It's even in the name.
Bob's Discount Furniture. And his commercials, price. It never talks about quality.
No, because some kind of deal. He has a great warranty, though. So he goes on price and warranty, and then gets you it. So he's like, okay, yeah, may not be the best. He's not going to say, like, I'm not the best. What he's going to say is, I'm going to lead with my value proposition. Uh-huh. Now, with Cookiers, you could lead with value proposition. You could lead with price and say, I'm the cheapest baker. But I see a lot of you are like, this is a ton of work, very little profit. And I don't think that's a business model for the large majority of us. Yeah. It may be a business model for some of you, and it's absolutely fine as long as you know your numbers and your costs are being covered. But for the rest of us who are like, hey, this might be a part-time or I don't want to be a slave to my job, then you're going to lead with the value proposition and tuck price right behind that after you fully convince them that everything they could want is here.
Yeah.
They just need to pay this bill.
Yeah. Is that all you had?
No. But you look at me like...
No, when, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm like, little side thing. Yeah. When I edit the audio of this, I'm talking three times more than you because you just look at me a lot.
You are a talker.
Yeah, I don't want to. Every time I look at you, you just say,
You have an opinion about stuff. When I used to listen to the podcast, me trying to talk when you're talking was so annoying.
I'm going
to
tell you. I don't want to talk. Go ahead.
Yeah.
When you do the yeah thing, I'm like, oh my goodness, my brain needs to think of something else so we don't have dead air.
Every podcast I've listened to that is two people that are doing it. One is always the talk and the other one's the yeah.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. There's 172 podcast episodes that you've been the talker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works. If you just say yeah, the other person.
Okay, keep going. You always have a good opinion.
Yeah. I was talking to this guy that sells cars. And he had purchased a car and he said that it had all these things wrong with it. So he fixed it and said, if I could just get rid of this car for what I paid for it, I'll be fine, right? Listed it. It was underpriced because the car had issues with it, but nobody wanted it. So he said, well, I just added $10,000 to the listing price and it sold the next week because everyone suddenly thought the value was there and when it was just listed higher.
Yeah.
So thank you. I'm going to talk again for the next 5 minutes. Yeah. It would be different if I didn't have the annoying voice, but I have the annoying voice.
No, that's okay. I have the annoying voice too. I just only want them to hear one at a time.
Their dogs are on. Your dogs probably hear everything we say.
I will say that I had this customer. Price, no issue. And I was like, wow, that's not me. Price would be an issue. Mm-hmm. But she wanted like these cookies – spared no expense. And it was for her kid's baby shower, right? So the kid's not even alive for it.
Yeah.
She had sent me the color
scheme. Hasn't even gotten here yet.
She sent me this color scheme. What was so funny is there's this, you know, bubble parties and they have like the balloon garlands everywhere.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
She had sent me a color scheme and I saw this party planner had made this entire arch from this lady. We were both working the same party that we didn't know that we were working.
Oh.
But like it's this whole backdrop that took up their entire – their backyard was insane. Like just a pool. Like so me and this lady are so far apart because I'm not buying cookies for my kids. You know, I'm making them. You can have a leftover. But she sees the value.
Yes.
She saw the value in a party planner, the balloon garland people, these custom treats.
So what did she – well, her value was I want everything to match – and I want it to be custom. Yeah. That's why that word custom really is the license for money because people who are used to custom, they're used to paying a price because they know what they want.
And they want that custom thing. A lot of times what we end up doing is thinking for our customers, which is the most dangerous thing because using our brains that
we're not the customers.
Find the value in the
specifically cookie. We're the anti-customer.
We're not the good customer because we started baking that you think – I wouldn't pay this, so I can't imagine they would pay it.
Right.
But you got to take a step back. They're not contacting you because they want an Oreo. You know, they're contacting you because they want a color scheme that's translated into these cookies with this. It was the farthest out theme. It was Lord of the Rings.
Oh, that was that lady?
Shire.
You did pretty good, man. I thought you did pretty good.
Difficult. I'm so, like, I'm living a better life because it's
Yeah, I could tell you were in a mood for the last month. Crazy. I have to say, Corey had texted me a picture. Sometimes she texts me to get my opinion. And they give it, obviously.
She talks about it.
And Corey is like, this – I know you were like saying like, this is the top of my brain's capacity. Yeah. Like this is everything I've got plus 10%.
If you were like, could you be a little bit more creative?
Corey basically like, you really need to tell me that it looks amazing because there's no other option. So I said, wow, it looks amazing. What are the clients?
I know. So she had paid for this whole party planner to make this custom backdrop. And it says a halfling's on the way, which I only knew because it's in Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
And she had sent me a mock-up drawing of this backdrop.
Oh.
And then I was just scrolling in my feed. There it is in real life.
It's so funny.
I know. It was crazy.
But if there's drawings and renderings that you know that person's like, I'm going to pay for it. And I know. And the interesting thing about value versus price is value is relative and it constantly fluctuates. So I think it's called the diamond water paradox, that diamonds are very expensive and water is very cheap. However, lost in a desert, diamonds become worthless to a person and water becomes the most expensive thing because the need for water now exceeds any want for diamonds. So when you have a client that really, really needs a cake last minute, suddenly that $50 cake and you're saying, well, I can do it for $150, the value's there.
Yeah.
You got it to what they had forgotten last minute and they're willing to pay $150 versus the $50 where you thought that was fairly priced.
Yeah.
Again, it's the value is that what's changing and the price can fluctuate based on how much value you can propose the value proposition to the client.
I also think that the way the world has shifted with social media being so prominent, keeping up with the Joneses is a big deal now. So you want to have the best hors d'oeuvres, the best dessert, the best photos. So you're hiring the photographer, you're hiring like the best of the business to do all these things because so much more is posted, it's prominent on social media, you want to show off. So you got to think that those people are out there and they're wanting to buy.
Yes.
To think on behalf of your customer and say, I wouldn't pay this myself, you're going to shoot yourself in your own foot.
Mm.
I would definitely not pay the prices for my stuff.
I can see Corey's faces.
Absolutely not. But they are because they see the value in it.
It's so funny. Corey accidentally got hired to do the yearbook for her kid's school. It's like a private school, small, but there's not a lot of teachers, so there's not a lot of assistants,
right? Willing participants.
So they had said to Corey, kind of like a voluntold thing, and they're like, but we'll give you some money. Of course, the school is not doesn't have a lot of money to be throwing around here. And Corey had the worst attitude in the world about this. Honestly, the worst attitude.
I was voluntold. Someone threw my name there because they saw how good my pictures were. Oh my gosh, darn bakery.
Marketing, darn it. And so Corey goes in and she's like, well, we need you to sign the contract. And Corey's like, I feel, you know, she's telling me, I feel like the minute I open that, it's a blood contract because now they can tell me everything they want me to do and then I make no money. But they've gotten a little bit of money exchange, so now I have to do it. Corey opens the contract, $2,500. I've never seen Corey's attitude change.
Yeah,
now this has been the light of her life. She said, don't call
kids,
me tomorrow.
Smile. It's Mama Corey.
Let me see them further ass. Yeah. But it was now Corey, who's very price-driven, not value-driven, her value came in that higher payment. And then
We're on the same value probably. Yeah. We both value this.
They spoke Corey's language. So a lot of your clients, you know, they're not speaking your language. And that's why, you know, I tell people like, put your marketing hat on, which is saying, stop thinking like a baker and start thinking like the person who's buying from a baker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very in opposition to how we're always like, oh, buying in bulk, trying to save my quests.
Yeah, that's why I've moved to more of like the confidence in pricing. You can be confident in pricing, but you need to say it confidently.
Mm-hmm.
Does $60 work for
it's
you?
It's just like the word just.
Yeah.
I know everyone's like, don't say, I'm sorry. I'd say just don't say the word just. Just is just checking in. Oh, hey, I'm checking in. I gotta have to give this date away.
So now I'm like, you'll be looking at an investment of. Like, we both know we're going in hard.
I'm sorry. Did you see? You didn't say the price. You said an investment.
Yeah.
That's one of those value proposition, those cues. I think they're called value cues. We use these fancier words that make it seem like such a better idea to get this.
Instead of like, dancing around this weird price, like the total amount of dollars.
Yeah. When you're scared of quoting a price, you are letting price be the lead.
Mm-hmm. But I will say, lest ye feel alone, there's sometimes I like to get the price out there.
Mm.
I want it to.
But not before you get the value out there. Proposition.
To me, like you've come to me through some form of value already. You know, unless you're finding me randomly in person, then it's weird. But if you come to me and you've gone through my form, my website is going to come. Thanks, Heather.
Mm.
My Google My Business, there, my Facebook page. On there, you can see the price of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not hiding it from you. So if someone emails in their referral from somebody else, rarely does the referral tell the person that they referred how much they paid.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So I do feel an awkwardness there because I'm like, one, they don't know how much Sally paid for this set, but yeah. they're getting ready to figure it out here because I'm getting ready to quote them.
Right.
That I'll feel this weirdness quoting them. And I'll be like, oh, God, that was way too much, you know, or something like that, because they are not coming from this. The value they have is just they had a cookie at a party.
Yes.
That was it.
Okay, but if you really want a cookie at a party and you're price conscious, mm-hmm. you're going to be at Oreo. Or you're going to go to Splurge at Crumble, which isn't cheap. But, you know, you're not going to get this custom thing. When people want, and that's why everyone calls you custom cookie bakers, custom bakers and things like that, they want – the custom is the gift. Mm-hmm. The food is irrelevant, really. It's the, hey, I thought of you so much that I spent a ton of money for this custom set.
Yeah.
That.
But you will have people out there.
Absolutely.
That do, they use the word custom, but they say without costing an arm and a leg.
Right.
So make it make sense.
These don't usually we have a custom arm and a leg amputation. Here's coming.
So you'll have those people that do not value, they want custom, but they don't value it as much. And then they'll find bakers that are willing to either one, take the loss, which they won't be in business long because you can only work at a loss for so long, or someone who doesn't necessarily care so much about the super intricate details. Mm-hmm. So you'll skip out on some of the details. You'll still get a custom set. It just won't be that set that you posted in the community group that you said, I'm looking for a baker to do this on the cheap.
I would assume that most people who reach out to a custom baker know the price will be higher. They're trying to tell you, like, please don't take me.
Yeah.
But also I know, so when I see people say like, I don't want to pay an arm and a leg, but I want custom, I think they're saying, I want somebody to prove to me that the value is there before I swallow mm-hmm. that price. So a lot of times, you know, you know, people, I don't want to pay a lot. You can still convert that person to a sale by supplementing it. And this is what the Cookie College was calling them, filler cookies, mm-hmm. cookies with no design, but they allow the box to be heavier and more people to eat.
Yeah.
You know, and it takes you guys 2 seconds to either dip or just pipe a single uh-huh. color on a cookie. It fills up the box, but they still get the custom order without. But you see, you've taken this price objection and turned it into a price conversion.
Yeah.
The other day, you're not allowed to solicit in Virginia if there's a no soliciting sign.
Yeah.
This solar sales guy. Conveniently never looks down to where this Ruth Ann has this tiny he's flower. He said, I've never seen.
Looking at the solar.
So I open the door. Ruth Ann, I don't know. She thinks the sun is of the devil. She will never get. So I don't even need to ask. Solar panels and that woman will never cross paths. She loves her some gasoline. Burn up that ozone layer. Make it so the sun can get to me faster. So the guy opened the door and he's standing there. And it's, you know, solar sales are one of the hardest things to sell currently. They had their heyday. Now they don't. Yeah. But it was, so I said, you know, I try to be nice because I understand it's such a hard job and he didn't want to be there. And it's also 5 p.m. Uh-huh. So he knocks on the door. Hey, I'm in your neighborhood and I'm going around. I want to talk to you about solar panels. I said, oh, thank you so much for stopping by. She's not going to buy them. He's like, oh, actually, we have this program. And I said, dude, I'm sorry. She's 85. Like, so this will be the last thing she'd ever consider. And he's like, it's so funny. We were just installing solar panels for an 85-year-old off the street. And I said, sir, you are a great salesman. And every objection you've countered, she's not going to sell it. She's not going to buy it. So I don't want to waste your time. But I am impressed with what you do. And I hope you have a great day. And he said, thanks.
Did he? Or was he like, one more thing?
And he was like, I'm going to keep your car when I get back down to the street. Yeah. But he's that when you see people in sales like that, they're truly adept at taking an objection and turning it. So every objection, which I said, it's price. Then I said, it's her age. He kept twisting it back to kind of turn it over until I went with the definitive, we're not buying it. He still tried.
Yeah.
Because his heart broke a little bit.
I had an order that came in. She accidentally ordered from another baker and forgot to order one kid on the baseball team's cookie.
Oh.
She needed one baker single cookie. It must have been like the lady was booked. So she has this set of cookies. She needed one more. It's usually I wouldn't take a random order, but I was like, well, she's enough. It's a circle. It's a baseball. So I was like, okay, yeah. I said, I can do the one single cookie for you. And then she's like, how much? And I was like, well, it's $7 for the one. And she's like, oh, my goodness. I was like, oh, great. I'm going to get a bad review. She's like, that is such a steal. If you didn't live an hour away, I totally would come and get it. But I'm like sitting here like $7 for one single cookie. And she was like, oh, my goodness. I was up the creek without a paddle.
The $7. The value proposition came from, can you squeeze me in and can you do a single cookie and not charge me $25?
Yeah. So she was, I was like, oh my God, I was getting ready to have to defend my whole honor.
Yeah. So if you want to take this and apply it to your business is if you're scared of your prices, then you haven't convinced the value proposition. You haven't firmed up your value mm-hmm. proposition. If you see a lot of people who constantly have a price objection, that is pointing in the direction that you haven't increased the value enough for them to convert. We all have enough money to buy things, right? And I know that we're in the part where the economy's finally reached this kind of squeeze point. They said, I was reading an article that Gucci, the company yeah. that owns Gucci, it rose like a tremendous, it was like 70% it increased through 2019, the COVID, uh-huh. because so many people had expendable cash because we weren't going on vacations, the stimulus yeah. checks. But they said this year they projected 46% loss because people are finally out of money
yeah.
and the inflation is finally too high. So uh-huh. we were kind of reaching this pinch point. I know a lot of bakers, if you listen to last week's podcast, like to say, well, nobody's buying from me. At the end of the day, Chick-fil-A charged me $20 for one meal. So, and
Chick-fil-A's
I bought it.
Line. It's ridiculous.
So what is Chick-fil-A doing that people who can't afford to go out are still buying from them? Their value
good
proposition.
Good food fast.
Good food fast, and they have an amazing warranty.
yeah.
So when we come – so, okay, instead of saying, well, people aren't buying from me, I think you're not adding enough value. Mm-hmm. So now as we get in a more competitive market, I know people are like, it's too many people selling and nobody's spending. No, the bakers also leave the market as well. But as we reach this pinpoint in the market, the squeeze point, if you stay the course here and increase your value proposition, you're going to be able to withstand, still make money, and outlast the other bakers who are going to immediately bail because they're leading with price.
And I want to say that Heather asked a question, a podcast poll in the group, how many people take a break during the summer?
Oh my.
If you can withstand.
Oh my goodness.
If you can be the baker that bakes during the summer, yeah. the amount of people that you'll get that will be coming to you because so many bakers take a break.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, this kind of astounded me. I think the poll has over 500 votes. So it's a good data yeah. set. 2+ week vacation. So all I said is you take a vacation that is over 2 weeks. That is almost 50% of the industry. So 50%.
I remember being able to work for that long.
50% of the bakers in your area, if this data set was applied to them, will not be competing with you all summer.
Yeah.
So what happens is now we have this kind of pinch point in the economy, right? So we have people with less money, but we have bakers taking vacations. Now there's fewer bakers for the supply. And even though there's fewer people placing orders, they're still going to order from you as long as you stay. Now I'm not guilting people if they're taking vacation. Yeah. We'd like to be invited. We will happily go with you on your 2-month vacation. But there, you know, some people are like, oh, I just throttle how many orders I take. I don't technically tell anyone that I'm out uh-huh. of town. I take one order a week. Some people say I just take off 2 months to watch my kids. Some people say they take their vacations yeah. and such. But the people who will stay consistent over the summer, granted you don't get to enjoy your life,
yeah.
You will be able to get these leads. And then come Christmas, you just be sitting
pretty. I know.
Now, to get those leads, what I'm going to tell you now to do is don't compete on price. You don't want – how you get them is how you keep them. If you compete on price all summer –
you want to be competing on availability.
There you go.
Yeah.
And availability costs money.
Uh-huh. The reason why I have some loyal clients is because whenever they order, I just say yes. Uh-huh. It might put me out a little bit, uh-huh. but I do not want to lose you to anybody else because you tip so well. I'm willing to lose some sleep over
I know exactly what you're talking about. That's the whole – that comes back to the whole rush fee where you guys think it's an extortion tactic, but you don't realize the value proposition is that you're taking the order and yeah. price is irrelevant uh-huh. here. Uh-huh. It's not an extortion tactic. It is an option for people to buy your time of which they are desperate for because uh-huh. the diamond water paradox. Yeah. Instead of the price being the leader, your availability becomes the most important factor.
Yeah. The lady who spared no expense for this cookie order of the Shire has already placed another order, and you'll never guess. The dog is turning one, and the people
if
are
I
having
die,
a party.
And we get reinquired. Yeah, I want to go to that house.
I was like, oh my goodness, okay.
I want to be that house's cat.
But you have to see, I would never throw a full-blown human party for my dog's birthday.
Ray, you give Ray a birthday steak.
I do give him a steak, but we're just staring at him eating it. There's no yeah, people
he's probably like once
it.
A year they get real nice to me. Turns out I'm dying. The stakes get bigger and I get older.
It's next week.
How'd you get it? Uh-huh. The steak?
Yeah, of course we'll get a steak.
The dog has no clue. This is a celebration. One, parties are mostly for the people throwing them, not
absolutely.
For the people being
so, food. Yeah, a dog birthday. Yeah, I said, absolutely. I'll make you a dog's birthday party.
Yeah, and this week, kind of focus on what you buy. Like, focus on the things you buy a lot. You know, some people are like, I have really sensitive skin, so I have to buy more expensive skincare. Because your value is in the fact that this doesn't break you out or cause your dry skin. So price is no longer relevant. Yeah. Your value proposition is different from the people like me shopping at Walmart.
Something that I spend money on, what? And this is so random, I'll pay more for Kraft cheese than like store cheese.
Oh, I know why. Because it's hard to get out of the
package. It's hard to get out of
the package. Yeah, I came over to Corey's house and Ray, the dog that gets the steaks, likes these cheeses. Corey has trained him to do a myriad of things, but he has no recollection of which one leads to a cheese. So he runs through this thing. Bark, don't bark, sit, paw, and then he starts barking again. Like these little rough, rough, rough. So I was trying to give him a cheese. Of course, he's a bulldog. So he's got those little cheekers that hang down. It is just, and I'm like, oh my goodness, let me open it before. But there's no sleeve part where you can get in and open the cheese.
Or rips.
Up.
So I said, you know what? Is it worth it to me? The value is to get the cheese out of the packaging as fast as I can so the dog drools less.
Yeah.
So I can get it in his face.
So when you go to Walmart and you see, I love Equate brand. Got me a headlock. Yeah, this is so funny. Speaking of value and price, Ruth Ann takes these diphenhydramine sleep aids. Uh-huh. Okay. She also found these. They have these hybrid Advil Tylenol headache pills.
Yeah.
So we go there and I ask her because she's like, I can't reach the bottle. And I said, okay, I'll get them. Do you want Equate brand, Walmart's brand of the sleeping pills, or do you want ZQuil? ZQuil was triple the price.
Yeah.
So she says, I would like the Equate brand. So I was like, okay. Then I said, for the pain meds, do you want the brand Advil? Isn't that the company?
Yeah.
Or do you want Equate's brand? Which on the packet of Equate's brand, it says this is exactly the same formula as Advil. And she's like, well, I think Advil works better, so I want the more expensive brand. Yes. It's okay. And she did it in the same second.
And it's the value. She said, one time I had a headache and took an Advil, and it went away. One time I had a headache, took the Equate brand. It didn't.
But with this diphenhydramine, the sleeping pills, she doesn't have any brand loyalty. So that's why, you know, I was telling Corey, well, I bought this new car because it's reliable. I know nothing about the reliability of the specific vehicle.
It hasn't been around that long.
The brand has been reliable. So I bought the value proposed by the brand for reliability, which trumped the price because I could have gotten a much cheaper car. But then I would have been
For four wheels.
Yeah.
And the open road.
Yeah. When you grab that coffee from Starbucks and you said I could have had a coffee at home. Imagine all I wanted is caffeine and liquid form. Uh-huh. But something about Starbucks, the environment, I like the shirt. I like the cup, all the things that are the value proposition that exceeds that 50-cent coffee you could have gotten.
Listen, if Starbucks has a line, you'll always have a customer.
Ah, that's a good one. When the Starbucks closes, you can close up shop.
It's expendable money, and it's the value that people find is where they put that money. Mm-hmm. So if you are not driving up the value behind your brand, I mean, value can even come to a higher priced product just because you price it higher.
When it comes to the car.
Yeah.
Mikey is a friend of mine. And he works in IT help desk integration. Mm-hmm. Buzzword, basically, companies say, we don't want to do this in-house anymore. We want you guys to handle help desk. So he goes out and sets it all up. Mm-hmm. And he says, we have two types of clients, the clients who pay us $1,500 a month and the clients who pay us $15,000 a month. He said the easiest client to work with is the $15,000 client because they don't care about price. What they want is the value of that we are efficient. Uh-huh. He said, but the $1,500 client is leading with price, but we're leading with a different value proposition and we always have conflict. They're always breathing down our neck. What are you doing? What are you doing? Because I don't think I'm getting the value for the price.
Yeah.
So he said, it makes it easy for us to always raise our prices because it brings in a different type of client that's actually easier to work with.
I would almost want to be so high priced that I get those types of clients that are like, I don't care. Spare no expense. My dog's having a birthday.
Yeah.
And then that I would want...
That is up my alley. I
think these are the best parties.
I want to be invited to a dog one birthday party.
Roots is turning one. Happy
birthday. Yesterday, I needed to get gas. I live next to the cheapest gas station in Northern Virginia, which is...
It got in trouble one time, so it got its hands slapped. Now it's like cheap gas all the time.
It's cheap gas all the time. It's so crowded that it leaks into the highway to get past it. And it's only a single entry direction, and there's constant honking because people, right? So I said, everything, I'm going to go get gas. My current value proposition is the cheapest price. I want to go to that gas station. Insane. I waited till 7 p.m. I said, but if I get there and the line is into the road, I'm going to go to the next gas station, which happens to be the most expensive one.
Yeah.
So the value proposition was relative to how I felt when I saw the line.
Yeah.
So it turned from price to time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because time, a lot of times.
I go in and there's a parting of the seas. There's one fuel pump left.
Yeah.
And I pull in.
Did it have a yellow bag on it?
No. It would have been fitting.
That would have been fitting. When it comes to me, I'm more like, I want to get in and out. I hate being at a gas station. Let me pay a few extra cents. Get in, get out, get on.
Yeah. People argue all the time about, I'm in a community group for this area. Again, it's just a hater group, as they all are. But people love to complain about that gas station. So yesterday, gas was $3.93, and the last gas station I went to was $4.50 for a high test, right?
Okay.
So let me do $3.93 is what I paid yesterday, and $4.50 is what I paid that time. Let's say we had a 30-gallon tank. If there's a 30-gallon tank, which would have to be a pretty large tank, yeah. I suppose, I'd save $17 by going to this cheapest gas station. But I would also, how much is my time valued?
Yeah.
So again, relative and objective versus subjective and price and value. It all works together. What we're going to tell you is increase the value proposition so that you can increase price.
Yeah. Do you want to tell them how they could increase the value proposition?
It's everything we talk about. It's better photography, better packaging, better pizza, Papa John's.
No, I want Papa John's.
It's better packaging. It's using those backdrops. It's using that natural light that looks bright and springy. It's better captions that really add, like, I'm so excited. I had posted about this on the Sugar Cookie mm-hmm. Marketing Facebook page. These value cues, exclusive, custom, limited edition, limited supply. I sell out. You know, this always gets, I got targeted an ad for some sweatshirt or something. And mm-hmm. it's like, this is the fifth time we've sold out.
Yeah.
That was all the ad said. And I was like, well, this is the fifth time so many people like it. And so that is all the cues that you can give. And then you have stuff that you can't see as well. And then we talked about it. Zhuzhing up your front lawn is a part of the value proposition mm-hmm. because I want to know that the house I went to that I paid all this money for is really clean and they put a lot of effort into this. Mm-hmm. Quick turnaround time, if you want to do last minute and you're very good at last minute orders, that's one.
Yeah.
Product availability, product diversity. If you say, well, I want this in cake bops, is that an option? Again, mm-hmm. don't get too in the weeds. It's a mix of everything.
Yeah.
And everyone's audiences will be different from each other's.
Yeah.
Love you can that. Add some words there.
No, loved it.
You more than a word. If you have to say one closing statement, what would it be?
My closing statement is, if you're getting a lot of pushback on price, you've trained your audience to focus on the lowest price.
You are the Dollar General.
So what you need to do is steer them towards you use the highest end ingredients, spend the time marketing how you're different and how price doesn't mean as much because they're getting exactly what they want and need.
If your skills aren't there, then your value proposition can look differently, but your price may reflect that the skills mm-hmm. aren't there, which is fine. The goal would be to increase the value by increasing your skills, and thus you can increase your price. Some people are like, well, I'm happy with my skill set. They're competing differently than you. Mm-hmm. That's why I always, when you ask a question in a Facebook group that has 46,000 members, keep in mind, you guys are working from absolutely different ball fields. Mm-hmm. You're in the same industry, but you have different targets.
Yeah. I will say, though, to continuously try to up your skill game is important.
Yeah.
If I ever have downtime, this is why I don't have drama for the internet. Because if I have time, I'm like, let me work on a macaron recipe to see if I can't get fuller shells.
Uh-huh.
Let me do something different with my sourdough to see if I could get it to
prove constantly faster. Trying new stuff.
Oh, yeah. So I have no time for drama because I'm like, let me use this time wisely to learn something new.
Someone said yesterday, someone said that the podcast last week should have been called Miracle Whipped because that's all it sounded like.
What you guys thinking?
But what Corey's basically saying is like, if you find yourself arguing on the internet or defending your, you know, people come to the group and they ask this question, they get answers that they don't like. So they spend the whole time, instead of implementing the recommendations, fighting them. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to refund this. Well, here's what I'd recommend. Well, I don't think they deserve a refund. Okay, what are you here for? You're here to waste your time and you're wasting others. Mm-hmm. Instead of turning around saying, how can I increase my value to my audience so that either this doesn't happen again or the clients like that don't buy from me again.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to I love testing things. So I will make a cookie and I'll freeze it for a month. Bring it out. Let's see what it looks like. What happens if I freeze a cookie twice? What happens if I freeze a cookie with airbrush? These are things that are going to help me, one, market better to my clients, mm-hmm. be able to take on to those last minute orders, but also get an answer so the day that I'm doing it, I'm not like, what do you guys think this is not turning out?
Which you're free to use a group for, but I sound like, whoa, some of you guys are waiting to the last minute here. You're really risking it. Have that refund ready. Okay, I'm going to move on to text messages real quick. This
do
one
we
text,
have any?
Yeah, two. Well, this is so funny. One text came broken into 9 sub-tiny texts.
Oh my
They're
goodness.
They're all one.
Okay.
Here's one of 9. I'm just going to read them.
Okay.
Hi, ladies. This is Bridget with Birdie Bees down in Georgia. I've been tossing around the idea of creating a separate Facebook group for a past cookie class attendee, sort of like an added bonus for signing up for class where they can ask baking questions and support one another, and I can post about future classes and offerings. I'm noticing that I have two separate audiences, the buyers, they want holiday treats and customs, and the producers, they are crafty folks who want to produce. I asked one of my regulars, when are you going to come to a cookie class? And she laughed and said, no, I like to eat and gift your cookies, not make them. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm just making sure I'm not missing something here. Any pitfalls to consider? I've never considered running a group page before. And since you guys have experience with one, I'd love your advice in setting it up and what kind of admin types of things I need to think of. I'll also add, I started cookies 14 years ago so I could do them for my daughter's birthday parties. I totally relate to the moms that won't spend $60 for a dozen cookies because I am her. I see this group as being a fun place to support a community of new bakers, and I'm not really concerned about training my competition. Favorite twin? That's easy. After last week's podcast, excuses. Corey, kidding. That's pretty funny. Well, actually, great question in relation to what we're talking about here. She says, I have two audiences, which we just talked
about.
People who don't want to spend money with me because I'm too expensive, and people who don't want to learn from me, they like spending money because they don't want to do the thing.
We've preached it from the beginning. The people who take the classes are not the people who order. I might have a little crossover.
They always leave class and say, I see why you charge what you do. Now, it's very interesting. We started a Facebook group to go along with the page to invite past class attendees. The reason why, we've now taught hundreds and hundreds of classes over multiple years. The odds of someone actually turning into a competition, it would have to be around 5%.
We didn't have someone join today.
What? We have had two people become bakers, and they're doing it so past time, I don't think we'd even see them. We also live in a very highly populated area, so it isn't, if they're from Maryland, we'll never see them.
I want to tell you, though, if you're starting a group for your classes, the content that you're posting on your page to get customs is not going to be the same content you're posting in your group for your class attendees. Yeah. It's double the work because it's two different audiences.
I'm going to say groups are harder to manage because you have to produce so much more content. Yeah. But they are so much more powerful in the conversion side of things because you can create relationships. Uh-huh. If your question is, should I make a group for my past classes? I'm going to say yes. If you have the time.
It'll be slow growth unless you've gotten your emails and you've collected them and you want to add them all at the same time. That'd be great.
I'd say if you send out an email to 100 people who took classes, let's say you've been teaching for years, you send out an email for 100, I'd be impressed to get 10. So set your perspective there. 10 people join that group out of 100, I'd still say, wow, that's a great conversion.
Mm-hmm. And then I would create content buckets. Tip Tuesday.
Yes.
Something to hold
you. It's going to be weird because you're going to be talking to yourself and you're going to be talking to yourself for months.
Uh-huh. Tip Tuesday, Flood Friday. At least you have two things that are going up each week.
Let's do a throwback Thursday and you can tell them how you used to do it, what you learned. Yeah, and you are going to be providing a lot of value by showing them tips and tricks. It will be a huge lead gen source for your future classes, but it will take roughly a year before you start seeing that.
Yeah, the problem is because people aren't coming to the group. It's people that have taken your classes. So someone can't just discover the group if you're not letting in just, Joe Schmo.
It would be an interesting tool. Let's say you see a
into anything goes. Look, anything goes. Like, it just turns into a normal cookie.
Yeah, well, let's pretend this. Okay, so let's say she's in a local community group, and someone's like, oh, I'm interested in cookie classes. She could use it as a conversion tool. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I actually teach cookie classes. If you want to kind of see the content we cover, I'd invite you to join this Facebook group that I have.
So then that's more of an open concept.
Yeah, it would be an open concept. I'd still set the group to private and have them request to join. Otherwise, you're going to deal with spam. Uh-huh. I would focus on hyper-local. That means don't let any other bakers from any other parts of the country in.
Yeah. I do find is people who take classes, a lot of times are just doing it for fun.
I know.
So we sent out people to join it. Only two joined it the first time, but there was more people in the class.
So two people who really cared
to learn.
This is our first time
having fun. Yeah.
So that's a great. So we have 20%.
Let's do a test. Okay. Send out the group to the past attendees.
Oh man, I have to gather the list together. Because I do as I say, not as I do.
Wash. But it could be shooting fish in a barrel if you keep it up.
Oh, yeah. I think it would be a huge lead gen source to fill up your classes.
Yeah, to show that would be where you're.
Courtney, that would be magical. If you had a class, let's say you seat 10 and only 9 people showed up, go to that group and be like, guys, 50% off this ticket. I already baked this stuff. I just want to see one of you there. And that would be a really great way to do that. So again, you'd have to really carve out time for it. It would be part of your marketing approach. Granted, you're not going to get the, you're so amazing that you get on your page. You're going to get people saying,
what do you do about so many bubbles in the eye?
And that's great content. I think it's a phenomenal idea.
We gotta listen.
Okay, last text. Hey, ladies, love your content. Thanks so much for all the knowledge. My business is increasing. Thanks in large part to you, ladies. I'm curious about your recommendation for balancing admin time, like responding for emails, typing up invoices. I've heard people say they have a designated day, but obviously I can't wait an entire week before responding to potential customer emails. Do you email as time allows? Do you designate a couple of hours each day? Oh, also, why I have you? Newsletters. I have one. I send it out monthly. Should I be sending out more often, or is that annoying to customers? Great question. I'm going to hit the newsletter one. I think monthly is absolutely fine for a local bakery business. If you want to send it more frequently, I wouldn't make it so much about your sales as much as make it value-added content with your sales at the bottom.
Always look at the data, though. If you want to test it out and send something, like test it out for a month, send one out each week. If you see like your unsubscribes are going up.
That's going to naturally be a byproduct if you increase. True.
But like you can, if it's like
ungodly. If your conversions go up.
Yeah.
If people are more apt to buy from you. But I would say if anybody asks me, that's what I typically tell people when they're like, I want to get started with a newsletter. Start so easy. You send one email on 12 emails this year.
Yeah.
And you'd be kind of set. And then I guess you could start increasing it maybe to twice a month if you wanted to see what would happen.
Yeah.
If it's a, you know, lead gen source for you.
But I would say test it out. Because we can say yes or no. It comes back to what your audience is. The open rate going up? Okay, they like your content.
Yeah, I don't think you got to announce it.
No,
I have no idea the email frequency a lot of the companies I'm subscribed to.
Some of them is every day.
Some of them, and sometimes I'm like, oh, I would have unsubscribed from you if you had emailed me the last 3 years. I'd say consistency is key over frequency. But if you have consistency down, increasing frequency and testing it, it's not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. You don't have to announce when you're like, oh, that didn't work out. I'm not sending you guys more emails.
What was the other question?
The other question was balancing admin work versus,
Why I think autoresponders are great and it buys you time. So I'll get you an answer in 72 hours or
but she's saying you can't day. Set – aside Fridays when I just said 72 hours. I said in 3 days, so it's relative to when the email
Like, I can't wait a week. So instead, have your autoresponder buy you 2 days.
Let's say you set aside. Let's say you wake up at 8. At 9, you sit at the computer until 10. You do not – that is non-negotiable. You get down. You get on the computer. You send out your invoices. Mm-hmm. You respond to any emails.
And you follow up with
you schedule any posts, and you start writing your newsletters.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you know, technically it's 5 hours a week.
Like my yearbook commitment.
Yeah. On the flip side, while I do reply to emails throughout the week, I like setting aside Fridays as my admin day. It also gives me a flexible thing, but you have to protect it, right? Because something will always eat it up. And if you find yourself on a Friday with not much to do,
that's why my heart feels like with an autoresponder, they got an answer back. So they're not shopping around anymore.
Absolutely.
So then it gives you the time where you can be like, let me see if I can even find where these cutters are coming from. Let me see what this theme is. And then I can get back to them with like a confident, here's what I can do for you.
I would like to tell everyone that right there is a compromise. Yes. The best business owner out there is replying immediately with all the information needed. A lot of us can't do that. So yeah, you run the risk that they may find somebody. But Corey says you buy yourself a little bit of time by setting the expectation that you will get back to them with that comprehensive email.
Because I know in the past, I've had people that have emailed. Of course, I have a day job or whatever. I'm not getting to them that day. And I'll get back to them and be like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear from you. I went with someone else. Okay, well, that does fall on me. So that means you want instant gratification. Instant communication. You can't always do that. So that's why you have in your Gmail account, you can have where it has an autoresponder that says, hey, thank you so much for reaching out. I check this on Tuesdays at 5, or I'll get back with you within 36 days.
See you in front of me. You can find me taking a 2 month break from my cooking business. That's a great one. Now, I think that maybe constricting your thought here is that you think you have to do one or the other. I either set aside Fridays or I set aside an hour. I actually break up my task differently depending on what they are. So the first of the month is where I batch schedule content to the groups and pages. So I'll sit down, you know, this countdown calendars. I do them all on the same day.
Yeah.
And I schedule, I actually use them for like that local community group too. So I'll schedule them that day. So it'll probably take 2 hours on the first of the month to schedule, you know, in groups you can only schedule out like a month and a half or 2 months. And then when I set aside the last week of every month, should be the last day for the cookie class kits by the time course. So I say, okay, my last week of the month is designated for this. My first day of the next month is dedicated to this. And then I handle like emails, correspondence, kind of first hour of the day. So you can kind of make it to be what you want, but you just got to protect and be consistent with yourself when it comes to that. So I make sure that the Cookie Class Kits has to be up kind of the first week. The digital downloads, the same thing. I make sure the $2 transfer clubs gets 8 a month kind of transfer sheets. And how that breaks down into my schedule is unique for each task set. Yeah.
Definitely. Sure.
I would say emails are going to be more frequently. You're going to touch base with that. I like the idea of setting an hour in the morning, even 30 minutes if you have like a slower period in your business. You're going to be able to get
that. That time has been eaten up by feeding my sourdough.
Where brought me a really a clutch loaf.
I did.
What'd you call it? A boulet.
It's a boulet.
A boulet?
A boulet. Is it a boule or a boulet? It's a French word. So sourdough. I just added a little
sourdough
e
people.
With the little thing.
Is it a boule or a boulet?
And I think the loaf that is like this is called a batard.
A batard?
Uh-huh. A boulet and a batard.
That's a longer loaf?
Yeah, that's like an oval loaf.
Is it not a bagel? Is it a bagel?
It's a bagel.
Sesame? Just keep adding accents. Okay, moving on to the Cookie College. We're actually working. If you didn't see Frygate 2024, do you want to explain to them what happened?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, listen. My husband.
Okay, backstory. Backstory and what this is.
Backstory. Grill and Chill is a class that's dropping first week of May. It's the June 2024 class.
It's a cookie class kit. If you're new to the podcast, it's everything you'd need locally to teach a cookie class in person to your local audience. We do all the work, all the planning, all the post photography, all that stuff, that value proposition stuff we talked about. We handle it for you. All you do is get your butt in front of a room and teach it.
And now make
each
that
month,
money.
Each month, a boulet drops. Each month, the class kit drops. And this year's, this June class, like this week.
Yeah, was Grill and Chill. Emphasis on the grilling part of it. Every Monday, my husband makes burgers. When he makes a burger or a hot dog, he makes crinkle fries. So to me, it's been 9 years of crinkle fries. I thought that was common practice.
I agree. Here's the – so Corey made a set. What's in the set? A crinkle fry. We'll get
it
to that.
It is a steak, T-bone steak.
I know. It's a grill front, a grill overhead.
A hot diggity dog.
A mustard.
A mustard.
I just chased this out. A bacon. Oh, no. I'm sorry.
A bacon fry.
A hot dog. Oh, T-bone steak. Did we say
anymore? Yeah, I just said T-bone. What okay, hold on. T-bone steak.
I have it pulled up right here.
Mustard.
Yeah.
Hot diggity dog.
Yeah.
Grill front.
Yeah.
Grill back.
Over
French fry. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So Corey comes out with this crinkle fry, and she says to me, here's the scent. I said, it looks cute.
You thought it was a crinky.
I knew exactly what it was. We posted, and everyone was like, I don't understand what that thing is. The guesses? They're hilarious.
They said melted butter. Someone said someone grabbed a corn on the cob too hard. Someone said a sad sausage.
It's so funny. But nobody guessed a crinkle fry. Yeah. I thought, okay, I was like, well, Corey, I know she doesn't want to change the design because she's already
I really had class. Half. That was like the final
By
step.
The time we see the photo, her photography's already done. So I go up to my grandmother and my aunt. They're putting together like a puzzle or something. And I said, speaking of puzzles, can you guys figure out what this is? And they're like, oh, it's so cute. I said, do you know what this yellow thing is? They're like, it's so cute.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, but use the noun that it is. And they're like, we're just not really sure what it is.
So I asked my husband, eater of the crinkle fry, to come over. And it was staged. Like, I had just finished taking the photos. And I said, go through the list. He was like, T-bone steak. Grill, grill. A mustard. And he said, a poo.
He's seeing right. Yellow stuff.
I will be upstairs in the cooking room.
So now it is a bacon.
It is a bacon. Very cute. I only asked you guys because I was questioning it in
you
my
were
heart
questioning
hearts.
It? I knew you were questioning it when you took a group poll.
So I said, if I ask, I gotta be okay with the answers.
You do.
And I can't be married to the French fry.
Do. Anyway, so I'm actually working on Frygate, Bacon Gate. And that class will drop this week. Now, the class is everything you'd need to teach an in-person cookie class and then some. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually so much stuff that people are like, whoa.
And you get a 2-in-1 cutter, fry, or pecan.
Whatever you guys wanted to be, crinkle question or bacon. So I was watching somebody who was like, oh, I need to create a class, you know, outside of what the twins offer. How long did it take you guys to create these classes? Somebody answered, it takes me 8 hours to make that PowerPoint.
Yeah.
And she's not lying because I can make PowerPoints pretty quickly because I make them so often now. But just imagine that you can either spend 8 hours, you have to come up with the set, you have to order the cutters from all different shops and pay all the different shipping, you have to write the copy, take the photos, you have to make
the
PowerPoint.
Decorate the cookies, make them.
Or
Let us know.
You just sign up for the Cookie Class Kits or the Cookie College. If you sign up for the Cookie College, you actually get an additional set of photos. It's the DIY kits that match those classes. And those drop at the same time every month. But again, just a couple bucks more. And you can have a DIY kit sale, cover the costs, and then some of the difference of those two memberships. Now, if you want to learn more about that, you can go to thecookiecollege.com. And you can see the option to sign up for the college with the Cookie College, $76. Not only do you get the 6 classes that will be in the 2024 class kits, you also get the 12 classes from last year and some other classes that we've actually had members create and donate.
But if you just want to do grilling and chilling with French fry, you can just buy that one.
You're going to buy the membership.
But I will say we're doing a fun one for July, which will drop in June. It's Christmas in July, which is a set that we have not done before. But I know a lot of people try to teach that class in the summer, so I think it'll be fun and easy.
Will they be able to use some of those cutters at Christmas?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, once a
July and Christmas.
Well, Santa has sunglasses on.
Could they?
You can give them some eyeglasses.
Okay. Santa's had a hard scene. So that one, so the Grill and Chill Frygate class will drop this week. In 4 weeks, the Christmas in July, it drops a month early, so it'll drop the first week of June. Then we have plants,
then house we'll have plants,
cats, which will be a blast.
Cops.
Then we are going to go back to the heavy hitters for that time when our industry picks up, and that'll be Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. So if you want to learn more about that, I suggest you check it out. Come join us. The water is fun. This is actually, I know people are like, well, I'm taking off my business. This would be the time. I told Corey, she doesn't trust that. I think I trust the process. Now is the time to revamp your website. Now is the time to revamp your products. Now is the time to upgrade.
Oh my God, trusting the process.
Because I think you think I'm wasting my time and just building new websites for no reason. But I said, trust the process. Come the busy time, and you guys can apply to this as well. When conversions are there, when we need our thing, if you dial it in the next 2 months, because I said to Corey, once we reach the end of August, it's go time. There's not a lot of time to think. You guys know what it's like. That is our Super Bowl season up until December, and then we come back to kind of a normalcy after that. So now in this slow time where you have more time, you can rewrite your product descriptions. You can, you know, update, you know, Facebook's always adding and taking away features. You can go and audit those. You can start really cleaning up your social media, your website, your online presence. You set up that Google My Business. Get your emails, get your email workflows, get your job form set up. Now when you do it and come Christmas, come Halloween, come Thanksgiving, you're going to be just sitting pretty.
Sitting pretty without the stress.
Without the stress. Yeah. I always feel great. Like, even go out to your Google Drive and clear out all the old stuff you don't need anymore. Just do a purge, an audit, a cleanup, a refresh.
There's one folder that says yearbook. I am hovering over the delete
button. With prejudice. And you can see that in the Facebook groups and pages I've updated, I've refreshed all the branding, right?
Yeah, looks
the
great.
Reason why I would do it now in a slow time, because you're all apparently taking off all summer, is because when it comes back to a busy time, that's all ready to go. You guys already see and identify with the branding, and you're like, where's the Vendy Blendy link?
Going on to the sponsors.
Lead us.
Sponsor number one, Eduardo. I have an Eddie order coming up. Thank good. Now, Eddie is selling himself. I don't even have to sell him. People are like, I'm looking at this. I'm with this printed cookie. You said the word printed. It's my magic sesame word. My boulet. <Sesame. laughs> So Eddie is a direct-to-food printer. He prints directly on the top of food. So if you're working with royal icing, he looks just like a printer that would print ink on a piece of paper, except for it's edible food coloring on your food. So he can print on royal ice cookies. If you do rolled buttercream, he can print on it. People are printing on M&Ms, almonds, Mentos.
Now, if you wanted to get an Eddie in time for Christmas, I would get him now. Learn him. That way, come Christmas, you've already run the test. How is your...
A big Eddie order that I get later on in the year is corporate gifting orders. And those are perfect for Eddie. You can't make 500 of something just hand-piped.
No.
When you'll die. But you can Eddie it. So that's what I love for corporate orders. Businesses love seeing their logos on things. You can even work with... Now I was looking on Etsy, and there's a lot of Etsy shop that sells prints for Eddie.
Yeah. So it'll say,
yeah. But you can buy the cutter set to go with that. It just makes it so much easier.
Practice
to do.
Now. You know, I look at the... I'm in the Eddie group. And the way that Eddie admins let you guys post there, your post would be deleted so fast your head would spin. But they let you get in there and you say, I bought an Eddie last minute and I don't know how to use it. Nothing's working. My order's due tomorrow. Don't be that person. get it now, mm-hmm. learn it, fail with it. Yeah, it's got some quirks and stuff. Figure it out now before you actually need them. And then when you need them, you know how to, you got your sassy tray, you got your melting tray, and you got your.
To me, just like macarons and your oven temperature is in the oven temperature of the tutorial you're reading online, Eddie works differently with your different ingredients. We're mm-hmm. all tweaking something out there, taking yeah. in something, putting extra water mm-hmm. or whatnot. You got to work through the kinks with your thing. And that's why on your downtime, make an Eddie cookie.
This would be that time.
Yeah. Make an Eddie cookie, bag them at this. Make them bag them with this bag. Bag them with a thicker bag. See what happens when you do that. And then you can be confident going into your next order.
Also, turn that as a marketing tool and start warming up and growing that corporate yeah. audience. Because if this is your first foray into your corporate girly area, you aren't going to have your audience dialed into that. Mm-hmm. And you're going to make that one post and you'll be like, oh my goodness, I bought this $3,000 machine. Nobody is going to buy from them. What a waste. Let me sell the machine. Mm-hmm. It takes months to grow these audiences, mm-hmm. if not years.
Months.
If not decades, your whole life will be growing an audience until you're in the audience of graveyards and they still want some from it. Moving on.
Royal Batch.
Royal Batch is a meringue powder Corey absolutely loves. It does everything. It's got a nice soft bite because that's corn syrup and it has white food coloring, so you can save money on that. Mm-hmm. And it also has vanilla?
Vanilla extract. Good job.
Vanilla extract.
Good job.
We're finally figuring out here in the third year. And you can find it from BakeityBake.com. So BakeityBake.com, it's called Royal Batch. You get it in a one-pound bag if you're just trying to test it out, or get it in a five-pound bag. Again, now would be the time if you're thinking,
listen,
I want to switch my meringue powder.
It would be the time to test it, but they will sell out in the busier months.
I know. It sells out. So I would say use code TWINS, uh-huh. all caps, to get 10% off, kind of cover shipping. Get your one-pound bag, or if you're ready to go, if you're like, I will make this work, get your five-pound bag. Yeah. And Corey really likes it. So judging by the people who like it and love it, they never shut up about it.
I know. I like that it has the vanilla extract already in it. Like, I have so much vanilla. I don't use almond extract just because I don't want people to be like, soap. Hey, like soap. But I put in so much vanilla, like vanilla sugar, vanilla powder. And I just like that it already tastes like vanilla. So if I'm like running out of time and ingredients, it's already good to go.
Cost cutting. And yeah. Okay, if you go buy a meringue powder and it's out, suddenly the price isn't the issue.
Oh, yeah,
it's
people are willing.
Does anybody have a bag? Can I buy some? So again, you know, there's people like me who like to buy things ahead of time and have it ready to go. Yeah. And then there's people who like to wait till last minute where your value proposition changes to availability, regardless of the extortion of price. Mm-hmm. Just something to keep in mind.
Do you have 20 terrorist?
Corey and I have her. I know I said this. This is probably sitting at a light in Lake Ridge. Mm-hmm. Where it made me put a sticker on my car, which is my antithesis.
But you said it was easy to remove.
That's what sticker meal. Actually, someone shopped the sale at sticker meal.
Someone saw me on the
road. Yeah, somebody. It's only on two cars, mine and Corey's. And we were trying to create hype and FOMO so it's so funny. Like, I was like, thanks, Corey, I got mine. Stuck it to my car. And somebody, and everyone's like, how do I get these?
I know.
Gotta get them frothing at the bit. Gotta hold out. And right before you know they're about to lose interest, be like, hey, I'm giving you these
away. Giving away,
something like that. So there's marketing.
This week,
there.
We're gonna give them away.
Because now we got people like, do I have to pay for this?
Yes, no, people were messaging me, how much do I owe you?
Yeah.
Girlfriend.
Just have to. So Corey and I thought it'd be fun if we could get these. We only ordered 50. I ordered from Sticker Mule's sale. If we could get these on 50 cars. Unfortunately, I ordered them at 6 inches in width. They're circle. They're huge.
But it almost, because my windshield, it's so slanted.
But vans are like,
pressing it a lot of leverage.
It would just be funny if we could get them on 50 cars. Then Corey thought, and this is a pretty good idea, if we could get them on 50 cars in the Lakers area, which is a small area, the first person to spot somebody else wins something.
Yeah.
So you know how genius Monopoly, being an old game, they're like, how can we get people to buy these? So they make these hyper-local versions of the game. So they made Woodbridgeopoly.
Woodbridgeopoly.
Lake Ridge is part of it. So Corey's like, let's get these on 50 cars. The first person to spot a car at a light with it, they'll win a Woodbridgeopoly.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Woodbridgeopoly, like, they went niche.
Did they?
Yeah, they have, you know, the Dave's Dogs.
Yeah.
He's a trailer. He's a guy with a trailer. Dave's Dogs is on there.
Monopoly doing that is genius.
Genius.
Now they have Manassasopoly.
I know.
I would be so curious what's on it.
I know. They said Burkopoly.
I need to get a Burkopoly.
I
want to
see what's on
there. Burkopoly. I think you got to put the accent in the middle. Burkopoly. <Yeah. laughs> If I got a Burkopoly, would you play with me?
Monopoly takes so long.
Charge you rent. Raise the rent.
Okay. Did we cover everything?
What's your interest?
Oh, do I have a twin dress? Oh, I don't know. I was on Instagram and a lady who makes gorgeous macarons dropped. I've been on her pre-order list for, I think, 5 months for this book on how to make the perfect macaron. I already learned so much. I'm only
in a book, like a physical book.
A physical book. Oh. Yeah.
What's a book name?
I have to look it up. I don't know. God, it's from Sweet and Savory.
Sweet and Savory. Sweet and Savory
Macaron.
Sweet and Savory Macaron. Just says recipe. Is it a blog or something?
It's a book.
It's called blog. French Macaron Recipe for Beginner. No, that's a blog post.
It could be in there, though.
What is Sweet and Savory?
She's just a macaron baker.
She's a macaron baker. Let's see. Oh, she has a new start here. This website is great. Seasonal recipe index. Oh, this is very nice. Let's go to the shop.
The book.
It's on Amazon. Her shop is called Shanice Favorites.
Yeah, she's the writer.
Okay. Looking for – she must not be on Amazon yet.
I don't think she put it on there. So the book just dropped. It just got in the mail yesterday.
I'm sure. Let's see if she's good at marketing, which I'm sure she is because she is. Let's see if it's on her Facebook page. Boop. Sweet and Savory by Shinny is her. Oh, yep, here it is. Very nice. And she has it pinned at the top with her face in it in a reel. It is called Macaron 101.
Yeah.
And it is also her profile picture. Let me just see more about it. See profile picture. Macaron 101, the comprehensive guide.
Yeah, so there's different types of macarons you can make. Swiss, Italian, and French. Which the one that I have always done is where you actually have to like kind of boil your eggs and your sugar. But it gets me sweaty. And I'm not about that life. And
you get too sweaty?
You're standing
Why
over
are
it.
You sweating?
You have to cook it to a certain degree. If you overcook it, it turns into a scrambled egg.
Oh.
It's too much. Too much. So then she loves the French method. So I said, oh, I would love to get her book to learn her French
France
method.
I didn't know what I had when I had you and your ballet.
The ballet!
And what, you tried it? What was the biggest thing from her book that you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't realize that?
Well, I'm only on page 5 because I've been reading through
Don't
it.
Don't read it too fast, don't you?
last night.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So she said the French method is her favorite. It's the most unstable, which I learned.
Oh.
But she still likes it the most.
Why?
I think it's because it's the easiest one. You're not melting your sugar and your eggs together.
Yeah, I hate melting my sugar and my eggs together.
You're standing over it because you have to have a temperature gauge in there. So you're holding the temperature gauge while you're mixing. Because if you don't mix, it turns into a scrambled egg.
What do you do with that?
It just is scrambled eggs in your macaroni and cheese. Yeah.
That's disgusting. Uh-huh. Okay, that's a good Pinterest.
I can't wait to read through the book and see what else I learn.
I want next week you to bring 3 tips from the book.
I will bring 3 tips from
page 6.
It's jam-packed. I'm only on page 5. I think I can find 3 more things.
Okay, see you guys next time.
Boing!